Well, we appreciate Dr. Smith. He did a great job this morning. Appreciate him very, very much. Appreciate his encouragement to me over the years and all that he has meant to us and Miss Betty. And I appreciate all he did here this morning. And I'm just glad he's still up and about and traveling around. And it's hard to keep a good man down, and he's a good man. And I appreciate him very, very much. He not only travels to speak, but he also, of course, is the editor of the Sword of the Lord. Did we didn't get those down, did we? We didn't get those. Are they out there? Okay. So maybe when the service is over, kind of grab a handful of their ushers and hand those out for anybody who would like to take one of those with you. If you haven't read one of those, you need to get a hold of one and read some of those. You see listen, a lot of those articles, you see, it might not be the most recent publication, but the Word of God doesn't go out of date. There's a lot of messages in there that's good. You'll want to get a hold of those. And so he's there. That's a whole publishing company besides what he does when he goes out and preaches. And so I just appreciate all he's done. Again, he's been doing that for almost 29 years and kept it going and did a lot of things to update a lot of things and a lot of equipment and all those kind of things. You know, you think, well, you just kind of go around and talk, don't you? No, it's a whole lot more to that to it than that. And just running the publishing company, he's not throwing a bunch of stuff on a Xerox machine and calling it publishing. And so you're putting out thousands of books every year, and so it's a big job. You got to edit and all those kind of things, and he has a design group and all those kind of things. And so Lord is good and takes good care of us. And I appreciate him being here, and I kind of call him my father in the Lord, and I appreciate that. He didn't lead me to the Lord, but he took me from the first steps, and I just appreciate him so very much. So Doc, would you come give us what's in your heart tonight?
All right. Again. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. God bless you. All right, take your Bible, please, and turn to Psalm 137. Psalm 137 is my text of choice tonight. And what a joy it is to me to be here after getting the time change. And, you know, you all had to make 1 hour shift this morning. I had to make a 2 hour shift because I live in another time zone. So I lost an hour just coming this way yesterday. And then when I got up this morning, I'd lost another hour, you know, So, you know, I'm glad I'm an early riser every day because this morning I didn't have any idea what time it was going to be, so I just set 2 alarms so I'd be sure and be up at the right time on whatever time it is here. But anyway, most of you found your way. You got here, and probably a few folks didn't. They woke up mid-afternoon, didn't know where they were. But anyway, I'm glad I've enjoyed it, enjoyed being here. We had a good time at the 8:30 hour, again at the 10:45 hour, and I'm glad you're back again tonight. Now, tomorrow night, I think I'm up first tomorrow night. I'm on first tomorrow. I think so. I think that's what I read. And and then later, you know, after I do my half hour's worth, Dr. Belcher will be on, and I think you've had him here before too, so you all know him. And he, you know, I know you know this, but mercy, is he a capable pulpiteer? He just does a super job, and I think you're going to be blessed by that. So we're going to do this one night at a time. More coming Tuesday night, Wednesday night. Dr. Campbell will be here and join Dr. Belcher, and so it's going to be a good time all the way through. And appreciate Brother Walsh inviting me to come and to be here. And by the way, Dr. Belcher told me this afternoon that sometime in the afternoon while I was taking my sanctified nap, which I did, but he told me that they had about a 20-minute pour down of snow. And that's only, what, 40 miles from here? And you know, I don't anticipate that happening again until, oh, I don't know, day after tomorrow or something. But anyway, I thought you'd want to know that. Psalm 137. Some of you are going to know this chapter, and we're going to just kind of walk through it a little bit here tonight, and I hope to be a blessing in the process. Verse number 1, top of the chapter. By the rivers of Babylon, there we sat down. Yea, we wept when we remembered Zion. We hanged our harps upon the willows in the midst thereof. For they that carried us away captive required of us a song, and they that wasted us required of us mirth, saying, sing us one of the songs of Zion. Well, how shall we sing the Lord's song in a strange land? If I forget thee, O Jerusalem, let my right hand forget her cunning. If I do not remember thee, let my tongue cleave to the roof of my mouth, if I prefer not Jerusalem above my chief joy. Remember, O Lord, the children of Edom in the day of Jerusalem, who said, raise it, even to the foundation thereof. O daughter of Babylon, who art to be destroyed, happy shall he be that rewardeth thee as thou hast served us. Happy shall he be that taketh and dasheth thy little ones against the stones. Now, those last two verses there, sometimes Bible critics will look at it and think that that's suggesting that little babies be killed, and that's not what it says at all. It is saying that the Babylonians, one of these days, they're going to have somebody overpower them. And when they do, because the Babylonians have been so harsh, so ruthless, that somebody's going to come in and be the captor over them. And when they do, they're going to kill their babies, and they're going to have a big time doing it. They're going to say, hey, we ought to do this. And he said, you're going to find out some of this stuff you've done to us. It's going to come home to you because you're going to have it happen to you. So that's the sense of those last two verses. But what I just read to you here in this chapter, there are three sets of players, three sets of people that we need to take note of. First of all, let me just talk a little bit about the Babylonians. They are the captors of the Jews at this point in time, and they had come down to the area of Israel. They had fought the battles. They had won the battles. They picked out the ones that they wanted to take back to Babylon, the brightest, the smartest, the most talented people they thought would be of some help to them, maybe others just for the purpose of common labor. But they had taken many of the Israelis back as captives, and these Babylonians are an ungodly sort. They are ruthless. They are mistreating the ones that they have control of, and so they really are, you know, representatives of an ungodly world. And in this case, they're the people in power. They're the ones that are making the choices, making the decisions, making the statements about who does what and when. Now, there's a second group of players here, the Edomites. Now, the Edomites, they live in what's called today Transjordan. It's across the Jordan River. Part of it is in Jordan. A little bit of it is in southern Israel today. But the Edomites basically were neighbors to Israel. But they too are an ungodly sort. Now, they are not doing the kind of violent things like the Babylonians were doing necessarily. But they were all the time agitating the Jews. They sometimes, that little Jordan River is not all that big. And you can shout across it easily enough and carry on some jibing conversations. And the Edomites were that sort. Neighbors they were, but ungodly. And so they would chide the Jews. They would say, hey, you folks think you're something. You folks, you know, have that great God, and you think that makes you special. And they would chide them and mock them about who they were and about their celebrations and other things. And always picking at them, always jibing and throwing out their epithets of discouragement toward the Israelis. Now, we've got the Babylonians, the captors, those in power. We've got these neighbors, the Edomites, who are always, you know, being in agitation. And then you have the Zionists, these folks who live in Jerusalem. They are the Israelis. They're the people of God. And in this case, you'd have to say they're the little guys, because they're not in power. They're in captivity. Babylon came, conquered, and captured, and carried away the ones that they wanted. Now, being carried away into captivity, these Jews did not cease in understanding who they were. They knew who they were. They knew they were the people of God. They knew every step of the way that they were Jews. They were not Babylonians. And they did not just automatically mesh into the culture once they got there. And even though they were having to follow the mandates of the Babylonians, they did not just give in at all. They remembered the city of Jerusalem. They remembered those great wall around the city. They remembered those various gates through which they came and went. They remembered the temple. They remembered the hills around Jerusalem. All of that was fresh in their mind and their memory. They never forgot who they were. Now, let me just remind you, when our world goes sour, when things go downhill with us, and whenever we find ourselves, as we certainly are now, in Christians I'm talking about, or in the minority, even in this country, you and I must not cave in to the plundering of the worldlings that want to push us and intimidate us. We must not give in to that. Now, here's several things that we have here in this passage. First of all, it's pretty obvious that the Jews are feeling some emptiness by virtue of where they are. And that's why it says that they carried us away. They're living in the city of Jerusalem. That's a sacred place to them. It's home to them. And yet the enemy came, and when the enemy came, the Jews put up a fight, but they failed. And that's got to anytime that you realize your home is about to be gone, your business is about to be gone, maybe you'll be left and your children will be carried off into slavery in a foreign land. I mean, this creates some kind of a national trauma you're not going to get over that real easily. And it says, you know, that they came, they took us away out to an unfamiliar territory, to an unknown location. And there, verse 3 says, they wasted us. They wasted us. Now, what's the deal there? Well, you know, in this context, hey, we're not in charge now. We've got to take orders from that wicked crowd. We have no choice because we're slaves. Now, you and I sometimes walk into situations where we maybe are not in charge, and it puts us at some risk. So very, very honestly, these folks, they were feeling some emptiness. But here's a part of the way they expressed that. The Jews in Israel, they loved those riversides. They'd go down sometimes to the Jordan to make a trip just so they could have celebrations on the banks of the Jordan. Very familiar place, these riversides, for outdoor events and meetings, worship and festivities, happy times. Well, when they got to Babylon, well, the Babylonians, they have rivers that make that main river in Israel look like a little tiny creek. They've got the Tigris and they've got the Euphrates there in Babylon. Great rivers, beautiful rivers, bold rivers, boisterous rivers. And here they are sitting down on the banks of one of those great rivers, and instead of looking at it and having the happy time like they would do in Israel, they said, we sat down there by that river and just without even so much as an announcement, they said, we wept because we were remembering what it was like whenever we were back home. We remembered what it was like when we were in Zion. We had not forgotten who we were and what it was about. Now, they sat down, and even though Zion, the nation of Israel, was not in view, at this point it was nothing more than a memory, but nothing more than a memory, that memory was there, and they wept. They were heartbroken, and they said, in somewhat of an embarrassing mood, I think, but they said, we hanged our harps on the willows. Now, you know, I have some people in my acquaintance that play the harp, and it's beautiful music. And the Jews have been famous for being harpists. And yet, here they are. They've got their instruments with them, but the harps are not in their hands. They're down there in a beautiful setting on that river where it would be great to get the harps out and play the music and everybody be happy. But they said, no, we have stored our harps on the willows. We've got them stashed in storage, and we're not playing at all. Those harps were not in the service of God at this point, but they're stored in those tree limbs, and there's none of the Israeli music. And then one of those Babylonians, perhaps some person in power, spoke up and said, we want you to sing us a song. Now, let me remind you, the Babylonians had music. They had songs that they sang, but they knew, and the Israelis knew, that the way the Babylonians sang and the way the Israelis sang was two different things altogether. Babylonian music and Israeli music was two different things. Now, they said, but the Babylonians said, come on, we want to hear you guys sing. Now, whether they're mocking, we don't know. Maybe they said, you know, we kind of like hearing. We would like to have a concert from you guys. But whatever the case, their music is not our music, and we know that. And so, even though we're there and we're in slavery and we've got our harps on the willows, they expect us to be who we are and to do what we do, no matter what. And you see, they demand at this point that we perform. And whether in mockery or otherwise, they want to hear the music. Now the question is, and they ask it here in verse 4, how shall we sing the Lord's song? We're down here in a strange land. We're down here under the thumb of a captor. We're here and things are not like they used to be. We're not at home here. This is totally different for us, and you expect us to strike up a tune and to sing the great songs and to do them with the joy and the happiness that that we would have if we were at home. Now, let me inject here for us. A few years back, what's it been? Maybe a dozen years now. I was in one of our major cities for the funeral of a friend. This friend had been a Christian for 14 years and was one of the most vibrant Christians that I've ever known. Used that last 14 years of his life in a way that very few people do. Prior to becoming a Christian, he was a big shot in the mafia in that city. And three preacher friends, including the son of the man that died, we rode over to the funeral, over to the church where the funeral was together. And as we pulled up in front of the church, there were black limousines sitting all over the place. There were men standing outside those limousines with long trench coats, and they had ARs and AKs and whatever else hanging under the coats. About 150 mobsters showed up. We had about 250 church folks, about 400 people at the funeral. 250 or so were our crowd, but another 150 of the mob, the mafia. They came, they were there for the funeral, and the son of the deceased man took me around and introduced me to every one of those mobsters. I mean, I shook more mob hands than I even knew existed that day. But as we pulled up and we saw all of that developing and saw, I don't know how many black limos there were, but there was a number of them, and a good number of them. And as we pulled up, one of the guys in the car said, "Oh my, what are we getting into?" And I spoke up and I said, "Guys, remember this, when we get out of the car, no intimidation. If there's any intimidating to do, we will do it, not them." Now, you say, "You're not that tall. You're not that big. You didn't have the armament that they had." No, but I knew who I was. I knew who we were. I knew what we were about. And the fact is, we're not doing anything different. Nothing different, because we've got a bunch of people there. Now, I've had more than one funeral through the years where that we had some, I'll say, unsavory characters present. And you know the track record is that crowd, they may not sign on with you, but that crowd will respect the fact that you don't take intimidation. And I'm telling you, I've had it happen over and over again. One case, we had a lady who was murdered in the dark of the night. And they asked me to do the funeral, and she had a long track record of bad things. I told Betty when I left the house to go do the funeral, I said, there probably won't be three people there. I don't know what I was thinking. She had been murdered. It was news, public news. And whenever I got to the funeral home, I know that funeral home probably seated about as many as this section of seats, maybe a little more. And it was packed. I mean, ever pimp, ever thug in that part of the city was there for that funeral. And whenever I finished, they came around, they shook my hand, and they, about two-thirds of them called me Reverend, which is a term I don't care for and don't use. But they were calling me Reverend, and they would say, boy, you said it right. You told it. Now, what's the deal? No intimidation. I knew they were there. I knew there was a bunch of thugs there. I knew there were armed people there. But no intimidation. And whenever we are in a situation, and by the way, the only fault that I lay at the feet of these Israelis are they put their harps on the willows. Now, we're going to catch up in a minute, and they're going to catch up. But right now, we've got our harps on the willows. And when you find yourself discouraged and taking intimidation, and you realize that you've put your harp away, and you're not testifying, you're not witnessing, you're not preaching, you're not giving out like you should give out, when you find yourself there, remember something. The world listens. They hear us. They see us. They know who we are, and we should never forget who we are. Remember who we are and what we're about. And don't take the intimidation that they might throw at us. These folks got their harps on the willows for the moment, and they're lamenting all of this stuff about, oh, you know, we're in a bad place in a foreign land. But here's where we catch up just a little bit. Because even though for the moment, they had those harps stored, oh, they said, when they got to verse 5, they said, I will never forget the home of our heart. We'll never forget about our city, Jerusalem. They said, if my right hand knows how to play the harp, as long as it knows how to play the harp, I'll not forget. I'll not forget. I will remember thee. My tongue may get stuck to the roof of my mouth, but I will still prefer Jerusalem above my chief joy. Oh, Babylon had beautiful gardens. Babylon had beautiful rivers, a lot of beautiful things. But it was like nothing in the eyes of these Israelis. And they said, if I do not prefer Jerusalem above whatever my chief joy is, let my mouth stick shut. They're saying, I will not forget. I may be trapped here, but I know what tunes I ought to be playing. I know what songs I ought to be singing. And he says, I'll remember as long as my tongue works. My number one priority will be to live for the Lord and to serve the Lord. Now, folks, let me make it clear. We're always going to have the Edomites. They're always going to be around. You've put up a sign out on the road out here that announces Lighthouse Baptist Church. You've got information on that sign. And I guarantee you, there are people who pass on Carlisle Road up and down this road every single day. There are people, might be one, might be 100, but there are people who pass up and down this road every single day, and they look at it, and it's like, eh, and they maybe say something ugly, or they may just turn and look the other way because they don't want to see it. Whatever the case, I'm telling you, those Edomites who mock, who goad you about your convictions, and who will shame you for whatever things that you believe and hold dear, those same Edomites are still in our world today, and they will, if we let it, they'll intimidate us. They'll choke us down to the point where we'll stop the great songs, we'll stop the great preaching, we'll stop the great work, and just say, well, you know, our world is gone so bad, it's gone so crazy. But the deal is, this passage is in the Bible to tell us, get your harps off the willows. Get them up. Sing that. Remember the tunes that you're supposed to be playing once again. And one more piece here about not only the Edomites are always there, but we need to understand, we may be under the thumb of some Babylonians. They may have the power at the moment, but they do not have the final word with us. We're not about to let them have the final edict and just say, well, hey, nothing we can do. No, we're not buying that, not for a moment. I mean, we may find ourselves on a day wringing our hands and sitting by the riverside and crying a little bit, but let's never forget, let's remember what it was like to be in Zion. Let's remember what it was like to be in Jerusalem. Let's remember when we had our harps in hand and pledge our loyalty to the one who is our Lord. These folks were in Babylon, but before we get out of this chapter, they've determined they'll not let Babylon in them. And that's a part of what you and I have to deal with this old world that's going so crazy. And our nation that's getting out of hand. We have to remember, we may be in the midst of it, but we don't have to let it in us. We can still be who we ought to be on every day that we live and breathe. We can do it. The storms may be brewing, but you and I simply need to sound the gospel trumpet and sound it loudly and clearly and frequently. The enemy may encroach on our turf, but you and I need to just determine we're still going to play the tune we ought to play. We may find ourselves in a situation where friends have betrayed us and kicked us in the teeth, and we may be hurting over some of that. We may have found ourselves just thrown down and defeated and beat and cheated and all that kind of stuff. And if that be the case, let's not forget who we are. There may come days when the fire's died down a little bit and the hearth of your soul has grown cold. I mean, put wood on the fire, build it up again, warm things up, and determine by God's grace that you're not going to satisfy yourself with coldness. When you're giving prayers up toward heaven and they seem to be unanswered, keep on praying. Keep on claiming the good blessings of God. The money runs out and the month is still running. Don't despair. Don't fall apart. But just claim the sweet blessings of God. Whenever you've trusted somebody who was faithful and they become faithless or unfaithful to you, I know you'll have disappointment. You'll have all kinds of heartache hanging heavily over you. But don't toss in the towel. These liberals, you know, running amok in our country, doing everything they can to destroy what we hold dear. We need to just remember who we are and what we're about. I mean, we got boys running all over the place thinking they're girls and guys marrying guys and all kinds of absolutely idiotic, moronic, ungodly, worldly, unthinkable, despicable things in the midst of all of that. I'm just saying to you tonight, don't put the harps on the willows. Get them off if they're there and tune it up again and get busy with what we ought to be doing. I'm telling you, if our churches will rise to the occasion, our churches will stand up to be counted, our churches will rise up in faith, rise up in the anointing and the power of God, these devils that are running around loose trying to destroy the country, they're going to find themselves in hot water. And you and I simply need to learn from great passages like this and thank God that we have the privilege to be His ambassadors, even in a time when we are in many ways trudging our way through the muck and mire of the valley. God help us that we'll keep on playing the song that we ought to play and being the people that we ought to be.